This isn't the first time that something was very closely something else today.
Wow, how specific.
It was the group chat earlier.
The
trashful
group chat.
You're trying to say pod.
No, the murder schmurder, the podcast.
You're trying to say pod sesh, but it was
pet sesh.
You said pet sesh, but I read it as peg sesh with Taylor. And I was like, I mean,
yes, but also.
It's not me getting pegged.
Austin's like, yeah, no, I know what pegging is.
Yeah, I know exactly who was going to be doing the pegging,
Taylor.
You won't
be my first, okay?
Like, so in order of who you're pegging or today?
Both.
Or like, okay, all right.
I may not be your first, but I would hope to be your last.
Aww.
No, because whoever goes first gets long enough to recharge and then go last.
You guys get married.
Yeah, you get to bookend it.
That's right, yeah.
The first and only woman to peg Austin.
Who?
An honor.
Taylor.
Not a pleasure.
Oh. It can't be both.
Welcome to Murder Schmurder.
Welcome to another episode of Murder Schmurder.
Who the fuck invited Taylor?
Wait, are we recording that? Sick.
Welcome to another episode of Pet Corner.
Right.
Hi.
Yeah, Taylor's
with you. Taylor is our
today's
guest.
Episode, we would love for you to fucking email us. Maybe who would you peg?
Actually,
don't email trashfill@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
This is Joseph. I'm glad email. You guys are here. Send us all your pegging requests, pegging demands, pegging questions.
If you couldn't already tell, this is motherfucking Austin.
He's coming in hot. You get him some Chinese food and you ask him if he wants to get pegged. He's coming in hot.
I've had a great day. I was at Bakersfield earlier today. I had a couple of margaritas.
Not a good time to be pegged then after Bakersfield.
No, you don't think so? I think that's like
after
ideal.
Mexican food?
No.
Oh, I didn't eat. I just drank.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I like your priorities.
Pegging after tequila, I think, would be probably ideal.
Yeah, talk about loosen up.
What'd you have for lunch today? Okay. A couple margaritas.
I'm doing great.
Everything okay at home? Why? No, I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
But, this is Jamie. I do have some good news for the group, speaking of emails.
Hold on. Who are you?
I'm Grant.
And who are you?
Hi, I'm Taylor.
She's back, baby!
Our special guest, Taylor.
Jamie, continue.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. We have our second email ever.
What?
Yes.
We have an email?
We got an email.
Is it from a stranger?
It is from a stranger.
Yes!
Yeah.
Not someone we know. Hell yeah.
The stranger...
are they mean?
Well, yes and no.
Hell
they
yeah.
decided to mock us by sending an email from doemailtrashville@gmail.com.
So they made their own email.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm flattered.
Yeah. Wow. They must have really thought about this.
One of our jackass friends.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, this smells like MC.
But they write in the email, it says, I'm tired of hearing about how there's never any emails, so here you go. Merry Christmas. Also, the new intro outro is better than the old one. Good job. The end.
Jamie, did you do that?
I did not do this.
I wonder if I know who did this.
I feel like Merry Christmas is a pretty good clue. MC.
Who was unironically born on Christmas, right?
She's like real close. Yeah. I think
it's like right around. She's a Christmas baby.
I don't think MC is the kind of person that's like gonna drop like a moniker or something.
Yes,
like,
she is.
Like a fucking
you mean a
killer.
Calling card?
Calling card, thank you.
Yeah, like a super villain?
Yeah.
MC is a super villain.
MC is absolutely that kind of person.
You want to call her?
Yeah.
You should see what her and I dreamed up
to
torture
my
ex.
I would not put past her. By the way, I would love that.
I'll keep you posted. I'm obviously not going to announce it here on this podcast. Yeah,
I just hope that you liked my haiku.
I did. I still haven't decided yet, but it's rolling around up here.
I think you should just let it fucking fizzle out.
I was going to set his house on fire, but your option is
But then you let it fizzle out.
Right, yeah.
The fire, the house fire?
The fire. Arson. The arson. Which, I mean, hell, I mean, we've learned enough about these fucking psychopaths to know that arson is, it's a gateway to
Jerk off at the crime scene.
Yeah.
All right. I'm telling you right now.
As soon as you get turned on by fire.
It's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you pee your bed a lot?
That's none of your business.
Do you have, Do you have a lot of sounds like a
yes?
I'm only asking for a friend.
Head trauma at an early age?
No. Surprise. Well, how would I remember?
You know? Ooh, I don't like that answer.
Absent father.
Ouch.
I think that's a few of us.
Well, I mean,
no one at this table had a good dad, first of all.
Dads, am I right?
Well, at least yours left. Mine stuck around, you fucking prick. Right.
We're doing a podcast. None of us had a dad who loved us.
He loved me in his very special way.
I'm sorry.
Which was yelling at me and making me feel like I would never amount to anything, which so far he's correct.
No, you're a man with a podcast. Come on.
Ouch. Taylor with the heat.
Hey, he came out with the dad comment. Okay.
I did. That's it was warranted, and I accept it. And I love you the same.
Jamie. Speaking of sweet, ooh, sweet love, we're going to enter a wonderful corner. It's called Jamie's SoundCloud Corner.
Oh, God. We're doing this again.
We're doing this again.
It's happening. It's happening. Again. Are you going to lead off with a bunch of the same shit we've already heard before?
No.
Oh. Yeah, I want fresh material. Yeah.
Thank God.
I don't have much time for Jamie's SoundCloud Corner. We've got a lot to cover. No.
Any time is too much.
I think the last time we did this, Taylor was here.
He likes to bring it out when the expert is on the panel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember, I'm going to drop the line, and then we're going to go around the room. Read 1 to 10.
Are we on a new song yet?
It was never the same song. That was just...
It had the same theme.
Well, I guess this is a new one.
All right, good.
New bars.
New bars, new theme, kind of.
Here we go.
Okay, you ready? First line. It's kind of beautiful. She make me bust when I see that twinkle in her eye. I fill her up like stars in the sky.
It's kind of beautiful.
Romantic.
Yeah, it's kind of romantic if you think about it.
Three.
I'm going to start out at 5. I feel like you really thought about her, and that's important.
I'll piggyback off of Taylor, and I'll give you a 6 because it was also surprisingly poetic. Gross as hell, but poetic. And you thought of her, so that's nice.
Well, mm-hmm.
Give me the line again.
Austin already forgot.
Or maybe
no, I just wanted to be clear.
Okay. She make me bust when I see that twinkle in her eye. I fill her up like stars in the sky.
4.
Disdainfully.
But only because it reminds me of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
I'm gonna drop that to a 5. Yeah, that's horrible.
Bust.
I like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
How do you feel about salads?
Depends which one. Caesar? House?
Ooh, I do love a good Caesar salad.
Tossed?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was gonna say it. I'm glad they did. Right. Who likes ass salad?
When you put it like that.
Okay. Well, when you say it like that, nobody.
Don't yuck somebody's yum, all right?
I don't want to
fucking
go on.
I don't need a Cobb salad out give of me someone's a fucking, ass.
That's yeah.
Give me
you had to pick someone with an egg in
that's
it.
That's the exact thing. So on the level today.
Yes.
let me get an extra side of that dressing for that ass salad. See, that's a better lyric than fucking twinkle twinkle little ho.
None of it rhymes. What are you talking about?
Give me some dressing for that ass salad. It doesn't have to rhyme.
Give me that dressing for that ass salad. Just it's got something there, there's but something it's not there. Worked out.
It's another dressing. T-shirt.
It is another T-shirt.
Anyway, so
we have to do some merchandise.
Yeah, we got
to
start doing merch.
Yeah. I need a new T-shirt.
Anyway, so.
How do you feel about this on a T-shirt? My dick hitting her uvula. I'm all about that green. I'm talking arugula. That's 10, baby.
Okay, I like that. That's a good one. Arugula.
One more time.
Yeah.
Run it back.
My dick hitting her uvula. I'm all about that green. I'm talking arugula.
That's good. Yeah, I'm going to give you
seven,
an 8.
7 for me.
Boom.
Yeah, I'll take a 7. I just want to be clear. I'm rating these comedically, not on an actual song like standpoint.
I don't know. If somebody snuck that into a song.
It'd have to be like, yeah, like a real rap lyric, yeah.
God damn it. I'm going to have to give it a 5 because I hated it just as much as I loved it. Like
split.
I
got to
be right there in the middle.
Ten and a like, one simultaneously, like, yeah.
All right. I'm going to say...
10 minus 10 is 0, baby. You know what I mean?
That was the first one you've done, I think, where I could actually hear that in a song. And I like it.
That's the first one?
Yeah.
He's like, hold up.
Yeah.
I thought I had some bars before. Mm. I think you've given me an 8 before.
Yeah, for comedic purposes. This is the first one I actually liked.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I don't know if that's a surprise to you.
What a serve.
Okay, well, I guess I went on in a different direction because I was going with a more...
Better?
I don't want to say serious, but...
Okay.
Here we go. Got my girl screaming, piping hot demon... Make her knees weak, pussy in withdrawals, keep that bitch fiending. Dyson vacuum and all hands on deck, like she needin' all my semen. Coat her throat, tummy full of creamin'.
That's gross.
Yeah, that's bad.
I feel like you could have read that better.
That actually was, that's like months of work right there.
No, don't say that.
You should let me take over these corners.
Were you gooning when you wrote that?
That's like gooning.
That's months of fucking, nah, I'll take that line out. That's too weak.
Fucking edgelord over here.
This is working over here.
Literally, edgelord.
Yeah.
You know what that reminds me of? Have you ever seen those like really, really high quality, like X-rated music videos that they have on their internet?
I think it's called porn.
But it's like, it's set to...
Lil Nas X.
It literally is like a song that they wrote for it, and it's shot like a music video, but it's X-rated. They're okay. Fucking bizarre. But I could hear that line.
I feel like I'm kind of into that.
Yeah.
I could hear that line. Send me in one some of links.
You mean like Nelly's tip?
Put them in the group chat.
Put them in the group chat. Yeah. No explanation. Just throw them in the group chat.
Like Nelly's tip drill? Like, what are you thinking?
No, it's like literally something you can find on Pornhub.
Oh, it's on Pornhub.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a category.
It's like MTV, but Pornhub.
Yeah.
Can I ask why you were on Pornhub and you found these?
Were those weird friends that showed me that shit?
Yeah. Now that you say that, I don't know. Like if it's like legit porn, I gotta hear somebody's clapping. It's just like straight music just won't do it for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You like the sounds?
I like the sounds.
Yeah. I like all the squishy and clappy bits.
Ugh. That was disgusting to hear.
Now you know how we feel. Right.
Almost as gross as that line that you just read.
Yeah,
that
you
I'm
just
giving,
said that and you can't handle squishy slappy bits.
I'm
bits.
Giving a flat 0 because fuck that line.
Okay, no one gave us a score on that one.
0.
0?
Yeah. It's like I gave you a score. You have to factor that into the average.
2, because I feel like you spent a lot of time on it.
A lot more time than you think. Like, whatever you think, come out of the you,
double it.
Like, you wrote all of these?
Yeah.
-2.
In fact, the last one was workshopped with another person.
Who? Here we go. Did you subject to this?
Are we again, on? I'm offended.
Are we on this last one?
That was the last one.
That was the last one? Yeah.
And that's you workshopped the finisher?
That? I workshopped
you
that.
You workshopped that with who? Marshawn?
Yeah,
I don't want to tell you who, but
it was
a woman. It was a woman.
Can I?
Person who, but
right. Love you anyways.
She might even get mad because I took out some of her lines that she threw in.
It's not better when you like read it.
It was like I had to check.
I had to check just to be like maybe he just it was ass like the way you read it, and I was like no.
Watching you like lean all the way over there just to double check.
Yeah, like, and I was just like maybe if I said it faster, like,
that was enough. No. Yeah. That was enough for me. Thank you.
Okay, so Austin 0, Taylor 2.
I really need you to like get a beat. We need like a SoundCloud corner beat that you just read all of it. What are you talking about?
That'll ruin my rap lyrics. Yeah.
That'll ruin these already absolute trash lyrics.
What are you talking about?
The arugula one was good.
Yeah. You started out strong and it just got worse. I'm mad that's the finisher.
I just remember all those times 21 Savage was like, you know, I'm just going to speak into the mic. No beat. I don't want any. It'll ruin the lyrics.
I got a system.
I need you to get like ad libs too, because that's like the best part is ad libs.
With no beat.
Yeah. Or we could do it together. I'll ad lib while you.
You're going to ruin it though.
All right, one.
Because it's so fucking good. <Let's>...
Okay, real quick then. If you're so good at it, what would be the ad lib for my dick hitting her uvula? I'm all about that green. I'm talking arugula.
That's not the problem we have. That's the one.
That's the one that we like.
That's the one we like.
I'm saying that she's like,
you got a five. You got out a gag.
That last one, yeah, I would say just be like, gross.
Gross.
Grant, what's your score for my last one?
I'm giving that a two, because I can tell you spent time on it, but I also, I don't enjoy the world in which I'm bored and grossed out simultaneously.
So I want to read.
And gross.
Damn.
It
this
was like
this
gross
is your
homework.
Problem. Yeah. You're way too nice. You're way too nice, Grant. Like I'm hitting you with the fucking double negatives.
Okay. Now we have to get down to the serious work.
Brass tacks.
Serious.
We're here.
Stuff.
Murder Schmurder. New episode is all about Charles Ponzi, the man,
Ponzi,
the myth, the legend who started the Ponzi scheme.
Season 23, episode 800, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's start straight at the top of this pyramid scheme.
Actually, I'm glad that you said that. Did you know there's a difference between a pyramid and a Ponzi scheme?
I did not.
Yes, I did.
Tell me more.
So a pyramid scheme is basically, you know, whoever is the founder gets 10 people.
Grant's like, I know economics. Oh,
right. A pyramid scheme is legal.
No, actually, they're both highly illegal.
Sit down,
now you have to call them a multi-level marketing thing now.
Yes.
It's a multi-level marketing platform, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But, looking at you, Lululemon.
Spicy.
Mary Kay would be Mary a little Kay. More apt.
Okay, that's yeah. Sure.
But nonetheless, they get 10 people under them, and then everyone gets a cut going up.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you're the founder, you're making money, doing nothing, essentially. Mm-hmm. That is the pyramid scheme, and that's how it builds up. A Ponzi scheme, which is pretty sick, to be honest.
Props.
It's a fraudulent investing scam promising high rates of return with little risk to investors, which works by generating returns for early investors with money taken from later investors. The best way this has been put and been described in my research is, quote, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, let's say I tell Joseph, if you give me $20, I'll give you $50 in a month.
And I'm like, that's more than 20. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Here's $20.
And then all of you each give me $20 because you're like, that's a sweet deal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joseph did it first. So he's like, oh, it's been a month. But because I have all of your money, I can still pay him the $50.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's say everyone else in the group hears that they're like, Joseph made such a great turn on money. Now they're giving me money. So by the time that you, Austin, are saying like, hey, I want my $50, I have the cash on hand to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep doing that until you just stack paper to the ceiling and you have to skip town.
Right.
That's the big thing.
That's the rule.
You gotta leave.
At one point,
you can't hang out.
Yeah, you can't hang out because at one point, you, like, everyone's gonna catch on. So the thing is, you have to be like the snake oil salesman.
Yeah,
you like you sold everything. Now it's time for you to get the hell out of Dodge. Get all the money.
Right.
They never see you again. You start the scam over somewhere else. That's how it should be done.
I found my retirement plan.
used to be a lot easier too when they couldn't track you as well, you know?
Wasn't there a movie with Jack Black? He plays some sort of like Dutch. He plays like a polka king and he sells these old.
I love that movie.
He
so
sells
much.
Old
it's
people.
Called Polka King.
Yeah.
And it's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. It's about this guy. He's like a famous polka player and he sells these old people timeshares.
Yeah.
And essentially, yeah. Like skips town.
Yeah, he's like running a Ponzi scheme on these old people because they're like his audience to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Is that what Polka King's about?
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta
watch it. About polka.
Yeah, me too.
So I never watched.
Yeah, same.
Now there's a lot of polka. Don't get me wrong.
Oh,
so
I'm
you
fucking
can still enjoy it. But no, it's awesome. I love that movie.
That just reminds me. Did you guys? I just went and saw The Beekeeper with my mom. It's like that Jason Statham movie. And it's about like how they basically trick old people into giving them all their passwords and like steal all their money.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it's It's so cheese, but it's like it's 100% just
Jason Statham's in that.
Is it? Wait, what's his name? Jason.
If it is Jason Statham, I'm just wondering where the explosions are.
Yeah, are you talking about Jason Statham's the guy from fucking like
Taxi
the
bald Driver.
It's in all the explosion movies.
He's the bald guy that's fighting everybody in all his movies.
Yeah, right?
It is. Yes, it's
he's like Australian. I think it is.
Oh, Jason Statham.
Yeah. That's him. No, that's that one. It's that one.
How many explosions are in it?
There's lots of explosions.
Oh, okay, sweet. Okay.
Yeah, no, like he like goes basically somebody that he like he loved this little old lady who was like a victim of it, and then he's just out for vengeance to like go and essentially like dismantle this whole
he's killing the people that are doing the thing.
I'm a motherfucking beekeeper.
Yeah, and that's his thing. He's like a beekeeper, like
buzz.
But then another one is like but then he's like they call beekeepers he's like crazy underground trained assassins of the it's exactly what you think it's gonna
but
be.
But he also keeps bees.
Correct.
I want to see this movie.
It's actually okay, so if you don't care about dialogue at all, it's great.
I'm gonna give you a nice sting and I'm keeping my sting afterwards. This bee won't die.
But it's like pretty great in terms of stunts and explosions and like Jason Statham.
Is there a line? I hope
you
so
wonder
bad.
Where your queen
this
bee is.
Won't die.
You're looking at him.
I'm a little upset that like you're giving Jamie's SoundCloud Corner such like harsh criticism. And then you're like, if you don't care about the words in this movie,
yeah,
it's great.
Well, I mean, nobody goes to a Jason Statham movie and is like, I can't wait for the, the writing was so good.
It's not like at the Oscar when their best original screenplay, they're like, guy who wrote the Jason Statham movie.
Yeah, exactly. Although I did go see that that wrestling movie, Iron Claw, with
that
Jeremy Allen
White.
And I just thought it was going to be dudes with their shirts off. All those dudes are hot. And I was like, I'm going to go. And then I was like, I'm crying.
I don't like cigarettes.
Dude,
it's not
Iron Claw,
sleeping.
So good.
If you haven't watched Iron Claw, stop this podcast. Go watch it. It's great.
It's
the
so
first half
good.
Hilarious. The second half, you God will be crying.
I just can't even. Just fucking it starts kicking you down.
Grant's getting out of here,
and you'll be a little horny. Right.
Where's Grant go? Did we pause?
He's going to watch the movie.
Are you going to Goon?
I think you just got tired of the
Jason.
I think you just got tired of the Jason Statham as a bee impression.
Okay. No, I just got hot. I turned the air on.
Which I can't even. I can't.
You're
even,
also wearing a hoodie.
That's true.
I can't get that image burned out like out of my mind. Just Jason Statham's head on a bee body,
like bee movie, but better.
Buzz, buzz.
The sequel to the B movie. I'm so on board. I loved Jerry Seinfeld as a B. I really loved the B movie.
You
the
like
B
jazz?
Movie's good. That's my favorite line.
You like jazz?
Okay.
You like jazz?
Okay. Charles Ponzi. Charles Ponzi was born Carlo Pietro Giovanni Guglielmo Tebaldo Ponzi.
Probably Guillermo.
No, hang on.
You're saying his name was Guglielmo.
Is it Guglielmo?
You do this. You do
Guillermo?
Yeah. Carlo Pietro Giovanni Guglielmo. You're right.
Boom!
Tebaldo Ponzi. Jesus Christ.
spell
We're not spelling it. We have too much to cover. I don't know.
This man's name is a Ponzi.
Use it in a sentence.
Yeah, did he steal all that money to buy all those names? What the fuck?
He was born on March 3rd, 1882 in the town of Lugo in northern Italy.
1882?
This is a long time ago, yeah.
Holy shit.
Other than that is actually...
Legend. Sorry.
Little is actually known about his upbringing and the bulk of his life. So keep that in context when I'm talking about a lot of this. Most of this is actually pulled from his own autobiography.
Oh,
sounds like a reliable source.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of what I have come across quotes his autobiography as a fact. And then it's like, you're listening to a con man.
Do you know if he lied to anyone? I mean,
probably does me. I don't trust him.
So his parents... How do you pronounce this? Do you know that?
All right.
Where? Ponzi's like, define scheme.
Yeah. What even is
Oreste?
Oreste
and Imelda?
Oreste and Imelda Ponzi were descendants of a wealthy and prominent Italian family that had become borderline poor by the time he was born.
I'm a borderline poor.
So apparently around this time, only 30% of high school graduates would go on to college. And again, this kind of goes back to things don't exactly add up in the way he words things, because he words it in the sense that like his family is very poor, but at the same time he's able to quite easily afford college without having to work.
Mm. So they're like
can't,
rich
I
poor.
Can't relate.
Yeah.
Wait, in America? Or?
In Italy.
In Italy.
How much can college cost in Italy?
Well, like I said, only 30% of high school graduates. 10
pizzas. That's a lot of scroll.
I can say that because I'm Italian. Okay?
Anyway, he goes to...
I'll trade you 10 gabagoos.
to attend Sapienza University in Rome, where by his own account, he was less than a model student. Apparently, he was fond of going out, going to cafes, drinking, and following around the socialites of the university, where he was known for living lavishly and paying for other people's tabs.
Same.
As a result, after 4 years, Fonzie was forced to leave with no money and no degree.
Same.
After 4 years, no degree?
Nothing.
I guess he didn't go to class. Doesn't sound like it.
So, some accounts say that during his university years, he had heard of several stories of other Italians who went off to America to find fame and fortune. And so, he left to go follow fame and fortune. Other accounts say that his family basically kicked him out and forced him to go to America because he was essentially bankrupting them.
Probably a little column A, column B. Yeah. Probably both.
Yes.
And also, by the way, he did pull it off. Like, he did find fame and fortune.
That's true.
Yeah, 18-something, we're still talking about him? Damn.
There's a scheme named after him.
Yeah. And he's star of a podcast episode.
Look at him go.
Means he's made it.
Several podcasts.
In eight names. He's made a name for himself.
Several.
So he hops on to the SS Vancouver to head to the Boston Harbor.
Abba.
His family apparently gave him
$200,
which accounting for inflation would be about $6,300 today.
I was going to say $200 in what, early 1900s, 1902 or something like that?
But now, 1802, he's 21 when this happened. So this is 1902, 1903.
Okay.
But he says he gambled it and frivolously spent it. Or not all of it, but a very large amount of it. He landed in Boston Harbor on November 15th, 1903, with nothing but $2.50.
On the boat ride over?
Yeah.
He blew it all?
He blew it all.
How long of a boat ride was that?
I'm impressed. This guy knows how to have a good time.
That's crazy. On a boat with limited resources. I mean,
I know he fucked a lot of people over, but... throwing some props.
I feel like a boat ride across the pond is maybe like a week, two.
No, this is a different time.
But even so,
probably about 3 months, if I had to guess. Because like doing it without like
I could blow $6,000 in 3 months.
Well, yeah,
I could.
Hell, you're not okay.
When you put it like that, it sounds a lot more reasonable.
Yeah, I just took 3 months off work. That's what I blew for sure.
God, I would love to just fucking have $6,000 to play around with for 3 months.
But this is also $1,800s money. You know, like $6,000 in 1800s is like
It was $200.
No, yeah, that was $200.
Sorry.
But also, you could buy real drugs. You know, you could just go to a pharmacist and be like, "Hey, I'll take all of your cocaine. Here's
$10. You could just drink Coca-Cola.
Yeah,
and get fucked up,
dude. You could get into a lot of stuff.
He gambled most of this.
Oh,
sure.
Well, he's not very good at it.
Obviously not.
It's crazy that he has a scheme now.
Sir, do you really want to do 17 black again? Let it ride!
Are you hitting on 20?
20. Hit me. 24. Hit me. Sir, you have 24. You busted.
Not yet, I haven't.
Anyway. So he lands with $2.50, which is about $80 now. He later told a reporter to the New York Times, and I quote, "I landed in this country with $2.50 in cash and $1 million in hopes, and those hopes never left me."
Fuck this guy. I take back all the props he just got. That sucks.
Boo.
Optimism.
It is said that he picks up English fast. I personally believe he studied English in college, but he never mentions it and just says he picks it up fast while he's in the States. Oh, I should also mention that... Well, never mind. I'll bring it up later.
Did you have it written on your hand?
Yeah, there's...
I should also mention... Never mind.
Don't talk about your hand. Anyways.
Okay. Since we're here... This is the third topic I researched to finally land here. The first topic I picked was the Columbine shooting.
Well, no.
Very hard to make fun of.
That's
that.
That's a hard one.
Can't. Very hard.
Actually can't.
I'm like upset that you even thought that right. that was going to be a thing.
Jesus Christ. Didn't realize we were dealing with Jamie Jones over here.
So he was the angle I was going to go with. One of the mothers from one of the shooters, they gave her a TED Talk.
This is getting worse.
Yeah.
She gave a TED Talk?
She gave a TED Talk.
And about what? How to suck at parenting?
You would think Jesus so. Right. No, that's a very valid point. That's one of my harshest criticisms. Like, what, lady, you are one of the worst ideas of what parenting is and should be. You shouldn't be giving a TED Talk.
Yeah.
And she basically just pawns off all of the things that she faulted, or like all of her faults as a parent, and basically says how
I heard about that.
Dude, it's messed up.
It's rough.
Didn't they just charge a parent of like a shooter?
They
yes,
did.
And it was awesome.
Recently. Yes. Good. So yeah. Well, at the very least, even if you didn't like parent incorrectly, like you saw signs. Like it's not even just like parenting. It's like a failure to report.
Look,
in a way.
If you have that friend, you know, someone you see once a month, you're like, something's off about him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that same friend is like, I'm going to go buy a bunch of guns. And you don't say something to somebody.
Yeah.
That's a shitty friend.
I'm not saying you should get the same sentence as him for murdering people, but you should get something.
But now imagine this is a being that you created and you have raised from infancy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And exhibiting the same things. And then you're like, maybe lock up the gun. Like, no, come on. Like, get the guns out of the damn house. Don't go buy the kid a gun.
Should have just used the condom.
Or that.
Dumbass.
Should have swallowed.
Or that.
Thank you, Taylor. I was actually, that was on the tip of my tongue.
I'm all up here, baby. Right.
And if it's on the tip of your tongue, it's not shooting up a school.
See, nobody's selling me on the whole kids idea, okay?
I was hoping somebody would make a cum joke about the tip of my tongue. Thank you, Joseph.
No problem. I got you.
Right.
In short, very hard to make a full podcast about that funny.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Second guy.
We could find a way. We're really good at that.
Challenge accepted.
Expect a future episode about that.
That'll be a Patreon episode. Yeah.
That's behind a paywall. Yeah.
Where we just give up halfway through and start talking about dumb shit.
Well, there's another guy. I tried to find like the best con man of all time, and it's like some Indian guy, but it's so hard to look him up and find information about him. One, because most of American media hasn't actually done any research on him.
Yeah.
And so most of it is in or covered by Indian media. That's one problem.
And two, you don't read Hindi.
Well, that's two.
Like translation.
Number three.
That's problem like 2A.
So, okay, three. Problem number three is he got his biggest nickname, the moniker that he went by, from another person that I believe that he scammed. So like the name that he goes by is not his name at all.
So you got the language barrier and then you got the name thing. It's a lot.
And he does a lot of things that are very hard to believe, and I couldn't find any evidence to back it up. Apparently he also sold the Taj Mahal three different times.
That's just a good sale.
That's
pretty cool.
I don't know why that rings a bell. I think you've told me about this.
I was telling you about it, and I was like, this is like, I read that part and I was like, this is gold. I gotta look this guy up. But it's so hard to find any actual evidence that this guy existed, like, and that is true. But like one of my favorite things that he did do that I absolutely loved, apparently one of his first scams was he was walking down a street and there was a building in construction, and there was like apparently like 8 tons of iron to build, you know, for the building, for its structure. And no one thought anything of it. He apparently started forging papers saying that he was the owner of the iron and sold it. And he did sell it. He effectively sold it. And then, like, when the people who he sold it to came to pick it up, police were called, and they were like, no, we bought this iron.
Yeah. I gave the dude the money.
Yeah.
Man, it was so much easier to pull some shit off back in the day.
I mean, that's all. That's like standing in front of a car at, like, a gas station, and some guy's just like, that's a nice car, and you're like, what do you give me for it?
Yeah, so at my old bar, the homeless guys used to stand out front and charge a cover and check IDs and be like, it's $10 to get in. And then they'd be like, get down there. And they'd be like, you guys have a cover now? And I'd be like, no.
That's hilarious.
That's awesome. That is really awesome.
Yeah.
Good
so
for you guys.
I'm like, you know,
he's just working.
He's just, also, yeah.
But, he's checking also, IDs.
Don't hate the player, hate the game. You know.
But also, when it comes to that, like in Nashville, you can kind of tell who the homeless people are. That's kind of on you, my friend.
Sure, I didn't get a look at the guy, but but also like these people are from. There's Nebraska wasted.
They see him and they're just like, it must be a Nashvillian. I don't know.
Yeah, they're like, that's just how they do it here. It's also in an alley. So I'm like, you know.
You're in their spot.
And to be fair, dude, if I've like been bar hopping long enough, if there's somebody standing by the door with a little bit of authority and a flashlight, I'm just going to hand him my ID.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that's a pretty like low investment. Be like, I'll buy a $5 flashlight. It makes $200 tonight. Yeah.
Also, usually though, like they're wearing a shirt that says security.
Sure, but I'm not reading anymore.
No, and it's $10. You know, they didn't get anything from you that bad. They give you your ID back. Come on,
I would say that it's more than a Nashville homeless person could afford a security T-shirt.
Yeah, fuck you, homeless people.
They're really busting balls over here.
There's also a distinct smell. Like I've been farting on myself for the past fucking however
farting
long.
On myself. That's
I've been
it.
Doing that, and I have a home. But I don't know how I don't fart on myself.
I don't
know. Definition.
But you
got holes in his socks.
You shower,
okay,
my friend.
I got a hobo toe going on. It's because my feet are shaped weird. I don't appreciate you bringing it up. I go through a lot of socks. Okay. My feet are flat as fuck. I don't know if you can tell. I have literally no arch.
They're
on my
not
feet.
Shaped like feet. Can't you tell?
Fuck.
Every morning I wake up, I have to shape them back into the shape of feet. It's like Play-Doh down there.
Anyway, back to Charles Ponzi.
Right. We're doing an episode.
So he's
probably have to
feet corner.
That's behind a paywall.
Yeah.
He is in Boston at the time. So he says that he picked up English super fast, but like I said, I believe that he studied English and several other languages.
It's so easy.
While he was in university in Italy. Nonetheless, he does a lot of odd end jobs for a long time, but finally lands a pretty consistent job as a dishwasher in a restaurant. At this time, he says that he would sleep on the floors, but he slowly worked his way up
into a bed.
To becoming a waiter for the restaurant.
Oh.
Started from the bottom.
Slowly worked its way up to a bed frame.
And what did dishwashers make at that time? Like a nickel?
I don't know.
A day?
But he was quickly fired because they said that he was fired for theft and shortchanging customers.
Shocking.
Yeah. So.
That's just lazy.
You know? Apparently he leaves
get
Boston.
Your bootstraps up, dude.
You always get caught shortchanging customers. I've worked in enough places to where there will always be that one idiot server that tries that shit. Mm-hmm. And they might get away with it for like a week.
Yeah.
You know? It comes back really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. It's lazy.
Bad form.
Bad form. You're right.
There's somebody I want to talk about, but I can't. We'll talk after.
Okay. Apparently, he leaves Boston and moves to Montreal in 1907.
Canada.
By this time, he had apparently become proficient in English, French, and Italian.
Show off.
And was able to land a job at a new bank called Banco Zerossi, started by Luigi Louis Zerossi, which was focused on capitalizing on getting the influx of Italian immigrants.
Oh, he was Italian?
Double Louis.
The Banco.
Careful now.
What's the bank called again?
Banco Zerossi.
Banco.
It's the Banco Zerossi. You want the Italian immigrants here in Canada?
Somewhere Sam is looking up in his house like, someone talking about me? Someone talking shit?
He was hired as an assistant teller while working there, and Ponzi would soon learn his biggest trick yet. So apparently, there was a separate bank that was also focused on picking up the Italian market sector, which apparently offered 2% interest on its accounts, which is, on average, very good for everyday banking. Their plan would be to take in the money, invest in Italian securities, and then pay out, or then make 3%, keep 1%, and give back 2% to the customer.
Hmm. Okay.
But to compete, Zerossi said the other banks were greedy, and then said that he could offer 6% to his accounts. How could Zerossi afford this? The only way he could afford this was by doing the Ponzi scheme, robbing Paul robbing Peter to pay Paulie money.
So Ponzi didn't even come up with the Ponzi scheme?
No, he didn't come up with the
Ponzi scheme. He just stole it from some other asshole.
That's kind of like, that's kind of legendary.
That's amazing.
Seriously.
Wait, the ultimate scammer. Right. Yeah. Scam somebody
no
else's
originality necessary.
That's super fitting, man.
Luigi the bank owner is like, ah, come on!
It's a Luigi scheme. Come on!
Luigi's never get the first call. So
right. Always like, living in the shadow of Mario.
Like I said, as long as new customers are coming in and people kept putting money in, then the facade can still be kept alive.
Right.
This goes on for some time, let's say a couple of months, and the timeline gets fuzzy around here. It's very hard to piece together what actually happened.
Good save.
Yeah.
Carry on.
But Ponzi apparently starts getting wise to the game that's going on and starts trying to hustle where he can. So he apparently sees one old lady basically putting in lots of money into her account, most likely a retirement fund, and he starts to forge checks under her name.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay.
Around this time,
classic.
Zerosi sees his moment and his time to shine. So he grabs a fuck ton of his money from the bank, skips town, leaves his family, and flees to Mexico.
Men.
From Canada?
From Canada.
Jesus Christ.
He flipped through an entire other country to flee to that country.
He could have stopped halfway through.
It took him 2 years.
Yeah. He ran forever. And this is what, 1900s? Yeah, early 1900s?
This is 1907.
You're never going to catch me.
My favorite part about that is this is Mexico and he's in Canada. So like whatever you hear about Mexico is like what you hear about a fairy tale land. Like yeah. I hear there's beaches, sun everywhere.
It never snows.
Big
warm
booty mamacitas.
Big booty mamacitas as far as I can see.
Big booty mamacitas. So the bank auditors come in and start reviewing all the paperwork, doing auditing, yada, yada, yada. Like I said, Ponzi's forging checks, and so he forges his next check, and they quickly catch him doing it. Apparently, they go to arrest him. When they arrest him, he apparently is they arrest him at his house. He apparently had just come from shopping, from buying an entire new wardrobe as he was planning to skip town.
You gotta look good, man.
They got him on the worst day to get into, because you know he was like bopping down the street like, right. I'm gonna look so good. Just like popping his car. Can't wait for Duluth, Minnesota.
Fur coat in the middle of the summer.
Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, Ponzi also wrote an autobiography, so he paints the picture a little different. This is how he does.
I bet he does.
He says Zerosi skips town. Ponzi starts helping out Zerosi's mourning family as he moves in and lives with them.
He was fucking the wife.
Oh my God.
Yeah, right? He moved in with the family?
Yeah,
he moved in. I'm here to help. Take off of your pants.
I hate you.
He
don't
says,
hate me, hate Ponzi.
He walks into the office of one of the company's customers because he's just such a good assistant teller that he walks into one of the company's customers, a warehousing company. He apparently walks into the office of the director, finds that no one is there, and makes himself a check of $423.58.
I'll take this.
Oddly specific.
Why?
Yeah, right?
I don't know why.
Now, you need to make weird numbers.
Because then they can look at it and be like,
oh, yeah?
Wait.
Yeah.
If it's $423.58, that means that one bill that we missed and that one invoice that we missed and that one receipt we didn't scan. Oh, you know what? I know where this went. Right. You know, that's too specific to be mm-hmm. suspicious.
Yeah.
$500, right. That's when I got a little suspicious.
Yeah.
And he does this often when he talks about being caught in his autobiographies. He normally just when caught, he says that he's guilty and lifts his wrists up and allows them to arrest him.
Okay.
Oh, it sounds like my ex. She's just like, yeah, I did it. What else do you want me to say? Oh, my God. Are we going to move past this? Is this going to be it forever?
Quite literally what I did when I got my DUI.
when you hit a cop car. Yeah.
I literally, yeah, they opened the door.
I was like, take me away.
I fucked up.
Yeah. That is the perfect time to throw in the towel, man.
Yeah. There's no talking your way out of that
one. When the cop gets out of the car, you rear-ended.
So why'd you pull me over, officer? You want me to do a field sobriety test?
You want me to do a little jig?
No problem. Watch me cartwheel, you fucking pig. Yeah, take me.
I can do my ABCs and my 1-2-3s.
So they throw Ponzi in Canadian prison for somewhere between 2 to 3 years.
Canadian prison for 2 to 3 years is nothing.
Can't be that bad.
Cush.
In fact,
I could do that right now.
Dude, this part's the best part. So he is still writing back to his family, but he doesn't want to say that he's in prison. So he tells his mom that he is now hired as a special assistant to the prison warden.
To the regional assistant manager. Yes. To the regional manager.
Don't worry about it, Mom. I'm just doing the finances for the prison.
If you think
they
it's
gave
weird.
Me a cot here. It's great.
All my letters need to be addressed to the prison. And I know that seems odd, but I work for them, so it's fine.
I'm working really long hours.
They gave me my own room. It's great.
Corner office.
So he gets out, right? Some Italians who speak no English need help getting into the U.S. Ponzi, seeing his opportunity, says he can smuggle them across the border.
Of Italy and Canada?
No, from Canada to the United States.
Oh, sure. Okay, I got you, yeah. I was like, geography.
I know.
Something's not adding up.
Math don't matter. Right.
I went to the ocean myself, Justin.
There's a land bridge somewhere.
Yeah.
So to inform the listener, at this time, Italians were seen as the low-class illegal immigrants of the time.
As opposed to now, yes.
Watch your fucking mouth.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, when Italians are seen as the fucking just geniuses coming into America.
Don't be mad because we're so fucking suave.
Okay? I'm jealous of your food.
In fact, one popular, now antiquated racial slur was referring to when referring to Italians is WAPS, which is an acronym for without papers.
Not my wet ass pussy. Both.
I had never put those two together. That's wonderful.
Yeah. I think they're spelled differently, but yeah.
They're spelled differently.
Yeah. They're spelled differently, but I have both.
Nice.
Wet ass pasta.
Never mind, three.
Now, I wrote this part so many times and took it out and put it back in, so we'll see how it lands. As a Latin person who was an undocumented resident for many years, but I'm legal now, I don't want to make a one-to-one comparison of me smuggling non-English speaking Hispanic men across the Mexican border and comparing that to Ponzi sneaking in a handful of non-English speaking Italians across the Canadian border. And it's not exactly said how or where they were stopped, but with context clues, it seems as though he did the equivalent of me just driving a car full of undocumented people across the border, because he was, as they're coming into the United States, they are promptly stopped.
By Border Patrol.
And they're like, where are your papers? And none of them had the correct paperwork. And none of them spoke any English.
I thought the Canadian border police were like, what's that smell?
It's like
I'm
garlic.
Italian, I can say that.
It's like garlic.
Terrible.
Pull them over.
But they stop all of them.
We can cut that out if you want to.
We were all thinking it. No. Carry on.
There's two Italians in the room. We're all right.
They all stopped, immediately found with no paperwork, imprisoned, and this all happened within 17 days of him getting out of prison.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Didn't waste a lot of time.
No.
I was thinking you were going to go and be like, he took all this money from these immigrants and said, we'll get you past the border, and then just pulls up to the border and was like, I didn't know they didn't have any paperwork, and they go to jail.
That's way smarter.
Well, that's what I would have done.
He kind of did that or tried to do that. So apparently when they asked him what he was doing, he said that he was just a paid interpreter for them.
I'm just giving him a ride, man.
That's pretty clever, actually.
Yeah, but they knew it was bullshit, and so the Border Patrol was able to get all of the men to flip on him, and they all admitted that he was smuggling them. They released them eventually and charged him for smuggling human trafficking.
Idiot.
So
that's very good. That's very
is this the Canadian or the American authorities?
And now he's handed over to the American authorities.
I'm picturing the Canadians being like, "You were just here, eh?"
Again.
So the Americans take him in and they send him to prison in Atlanta, Georgia.
Way worse.
way worse. But. I have a lot to cover, but he actually befriends people in the mob at this time.
The Dixie Mob?
In Atlanta. I forget exactly where
everywhere.
One, but it's like a side tangent that really adds up to nothing.
Is this the Italian mafia?
It might be the Italian mafia.
Because, I mean, they did travel. Like, I mean, yeah. Fucking, what's his face?
Several factions of like different mobs in Atlanta.
I mean, Al Capone
they're still there. What am I talking
had
about?
Had ties here in Tennessee. You know, like they came to the South for sure.
But
we had a shitload of money.
Bootlegging.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, he does a couple odd end jobs for them while in prison. It really doesn't matter much. He pretty much doesn't have any more ties afterwards. So he gets out of prison. And he basically is just going from town to town, picking up small jobs, and he ends up in a mining town in Alabama. Exactly how, I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah.
And this is awesome. He becomes a nurse to a mining company.
And a nurse?
I'll just dabble in the medical field now.
Thank you for saying that, because I looked through so many different articles and looked through so many documentaries, and at no point in time did I find any evidence that he had any medical expertise, training, or anything of the sort, and no article mentions it or bats an eyelash.
Just put a Band-Aid on it.
Do you know the town name? Being from Alabama, I can very quickly tell you, he just needs to say that he's a nurse. And we'll say, oh, thank God.
Just say it with confidence, okay?
Hey, you're bleeding. That's the nurse.
Hey, he's good at his job.
Which in the early 1900s, probably.
I mean,
they're just like, do you want some cocaine?
Yeah. I got a tackle box full of drugs and bandages. Yeah. You're like, you're hired.
So he comes, while he's working as a nurse, he comes up with the idea that he should start a utility company to provide water and electricity to the mining towns.
This man has range. He's a renaissance man of his
he
time.
Really is.
But again, he has no money. So he starts off by trying to sell stock of this company to build up capital and make it all happen. But then something interesting happens. And there's some fill in the blanks here. And I think you can help me fill in the blanks. Okay, so apparently a fellow nurse named Pearl Gossett, whom he allegedly did not know, that is clarified several times, he did not know her.
He did not have relations with this woman.
But she got horrifically burned in a kerosene accident in one of the mines and needed skin grafts that would have otherwise would have made her lose limbs or even die. So he allegedly donated over 100 square inches of his own skin.
What?
From
chivalry.
Which
just
was taken.
Isn't what it used to be. Would you guys?
No.
Just like what, like each of you, 20 inches for me.
Sure.
Yeah. For you?
Sure.
Yeah. For you?
20 absolutely. Inches?
Like your, yeah. Like your ass cheeks, you know?
Well, no, oh, I like those.
But not the money maker.
If I knew that Taylor was walking around with my ass skin,
never let her forget. Yeah,
I mean, no, I wouldn't say
what's up,
nothing.
Ass face?
You're just a piece of ass.
Just to have that information for myself.
And Joseph, you would clearly have markers for Taylor. Like,
yeah, you would know.
Oh, yeah, can I pick the tattoos? Yeah.
You would very clearly know which part was me.
The one, the A-cap one.
Okay, you can have the A-cap one. That's fine.
I just want to go last because I want to know everyone else is doing their fair part. Like, I don't want to be the first one and then, like, it's like, I did 20, Grant does 20, and then the doctor's like, oh, we only needed 40, actually.
And I'm like, oh, damn, I would have given it to.
I want to be the last guy. Like, oh, we need the slash 20. It's like,
I'll let, okay. I'll let you pick which spot you want.
You're a real son of a bitch.
I'm just trying to get some new ink,
Joseph,
you guys.
Joseph and I over here are like, no question. You're like, ah, I want to see what everybody else does.
I'll go last.
Just write it out. See if you
really literally, it. Like, when they get to Jamie, they just take, like, a piece off your elbow, and you're like, oh, you make a big deal out of it.
I just get his weakness.
Right. Like, oh, this hurts so bad.
I don't know. It's growing back.
Joseph,
just
you'll never
itchy.
Understand my pain.
Does this look infected?
I'm just, like, half my neck is just, like, exposed. Like, it looks like Big League Chew. Like, yeah, it sucks for you.
I'm missing 3/4 of my thigh.
Yeah. My favorite piece got taken by Taylor, but yeah, sure, that's right, fine.
Right. I would definitely go to the hospital and be like, Taylor, I gave you everything. Like, there's no...
Can I get a picture of Tia and Tamara? For those of you that
are
don't know,
yeah,
yeah, Jamie calls my tits Tia and Tamara. And he's been constantly using different faults in his life to orchestrate me sending him a picture of them. So you're saying there's a chance.
My dear listener, we've known each other for a very long time.
We're all quite chummy. Right.
So anyway. he donates 100 square inches of skin. Accounts, again, differ wildly on how much skin he actually gave. Some accounts actually say it was double that.
But, double? No yeah, way.
But nonetheless, he goes in the hospital for 4 months and had multiple complications. And in that same time, another company started to service the mining companies for their water and electricity.
And he just gets to look fucked up because of it. Love it.
Chicks love scars.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I believe that he gave skin.
Well,
yeah, is he's got some skin in this
thing. Documented.
He probably just got his fucking ass beaten and was like bedside for 4 months. He was like, yeah, I donated all my skin to this horribly burned woman.
Yeah. He tried to fleece some big ass miner and then they caught him, beat the shit out of him.
That's
and
why like, you haven't seen me for exactly 4 months since I got my ass kicked.
Yeah.
I think if he did donate, and that's if he did it, he accidentally caused the whole kerosene accident.
Yeah, to say very specifically that you don't know this woman who was horrifically burned in kerosene. I'd be like if you heard a bunch of cars hitting outside and I just ran, like power walked in. It's like, I wasn't driving. I don't know what that was.
I've never heard of a car. I don't know why. Why are you looking at me?
I walked here.
He tattoos my bad before he donates.
Anyway, he is eventually fired and then leaves and starts his life again in Boston.
Boston.
Going back to Boston.
Back to Boston, baby.
Shipping back up to Boston.
Dropkick Murphys.
I love that song.
God,
anyway,
that song
he
so
finds
annoying.
The love of his life, a fellow Italian immigrant and stenographer, Rose Maria Gnecco. At the same time, he tried to run and start up several companies, all of which quickly failed. But she stuck by him, and they eventually married in 1918. To help give context on how he could pull this off, Rose is 23 and Ponzi is 36.
I'm sorry, where's that kind of woman these days? Just you're ride or die.
Just Bonnie and Clyde.
Through and through.
It helps if there's a 13-year age gap. I think it really does.
I'm sure she thought he was very rich.
I mean, okay, point taken.
I'm sure he gave her that idea.
Yes.
You know, like he probably rolled in looking real nice with a bunch of clothes he stole and then sweat.
And some sick scars.
Yeah. Oh, that kerosene lantern accident.
I saved the lady's life. Yeah. Shortly thereafter, he helped her family who owned a small fruit stand in downtown Boston that supposedly was, or at least he says, was failing anyway. And by the time he took it over, it went bankrupt within the year of him running it.
Shocking.
In his defense, the American economy was still in a recession as it was getting out of World War I, but it's hard to say if it was his doing or not. Nonetheless, again, she sticks by his side as he starts his next big venture, as he apparently talks to her about his big dreams, aspirations, and how he wants to give her and adorn her with a lavish lifestyle.
I'll show you aspirations.
supposedly, Rose would go on to say,
thanks,
many.
I'll show you Asperger's.
Supposedly, Rose, on many occasions, would often say how she didn't need money to be happy. He was the one that actually...
It's a lie that poor people say. It's like money can't buy happiness. I'm like, that's what rich people tell poor people.
So we don't kill them.
Yeah. So we don't rise up. It's like rain on your wedding day. I'm like, you're just fucking saying that it's good luck to make me feel better.
God. She says it with such tenacity. I love it.
That's what they fucking tell you.
They fucking tell you.
Either way, Ponzi dove headfirst into his biggest scheme yet. The year, mid to late 1919. He rents a small office in downtown.
Big jump.
Yeah, big jump.
He wasn't doing anything for 8 decades. Himself.
Well, I mean, like, he meets or moves to Boston, meets Maria or Rose in 1918.
Right. So, runs her family business into the ground.
Runs it to the ground. 1919 starts over.
Right.
And
what's next?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. He's just rubbing his hands, just like, I'll figure it out now.
Gotta get back on the horse.
So, before figuring out what he's gonna do, he rents a small office in downtown Boston. Which
Boston.
I love. I just love the idea of like, what's your business? We'll figure it out when we get there. Yeah.
I got the office though. Yeah.
You need a place to conduct business before you can do business.
That was literally us starting this podcast.
What's it about? Nobody fucking knows.
Okay, so he could barely even afford the rent for the office, yet he still needed furniture for the office. So he goes to a local secondhand furniture store, picked out about $350 worth of furniture, and struck a deal with the owner himself to pay $50 as the down payment, then $5 a month, meaning it would take him 5 years to pay off the furniture.
Been there, bro.
Asbestos and all.
It's a Rent-A-Center.
Keep this in mind because we're going to have to bring that back up later, okay?
Okay.
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 Now, what was Ponzi's first plan? It was to run an import and export business, which can be very, very lucrative. But his biggest problem is he had no contacts with importing or exporting any goods of any sort. So he realized how hard it would be for him to break into that sector. So he pivoted and decided he would make a free magazine called The Trader's Guide. And it would help, he would sell it, essentially, sell the advertisement, and that's where he would make the money, but he would hand it for free to the people that he wanted to break into the sector.
And that ended up becoming Trader Joe's.
What?
Because Trader. No. Weekly Trader.
No, no.
Trader's Guide. Okay.
Trader's Guide.
No. I see the wordplay.
Fuck okay. You guys.
Let the man cook.
Okay, so he prints it in several languages so he can send it to different companies across Europe and the United States, only to realize how much it actually costs to print, run, and funny enough, he did not take into account that he would have to fill the magazine with worthwhile content.
Oh, been there.
This is sounding a lot like our podcast.
I'm also seeing a pattern here.
Wait, we have to do the horse.
Good ones?
Worthwhile content?
As you can imagine, his magazine company was about to go bankrupt before selling his first magazine. So to paint the picture, he is apparently sitting in his office that he already paid for with furniture he was already in debt for in the company that turned from import-export to magazine company, all about to go bankrupt before it could even print its first copy. And right now, the king of putting the horse before the cart sits down and decides to rifle through the mail.
The American dream.
He gets a piece of mail from Spain. He opens it, requesting a copy of the magazine, but with it is his golden ticket.
Hallelujah.
Goodness, you want some wine with that cheese?
He finds a postal reply coupon. Like coupon. I said, this becomes his golden ticket. To give context.
Come on, Charlie.
In 1906, 63 countries came together. They realized it was hard for people to send mail, especially from the United States, to more poor nations and get mail back because people couldn't afford stamps. Like, one person can, but to make sure the other
that's
person...
that's an expensive stamp.
Mm-hmm. So what was often the case was
collect
that,
call, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was often the case was that people would come to the States, send mail to their families, but because so many people in Europe were facing poverty and have an inability to pay for the mail, they would be unable to send mail back. To help alleviate that, the nations came together, creating the postal reply coupon. So the Spanish correspondent had enclosed in it a prepayment of reply postage that was worth, well, that was bought from a Spanish post office for 30 centavos. And it could be exchanged for a U.S. postage stamp worth 5 cents. A redemption rate that was fixed by international treaty.
Man, I'm lost.
Okay. So, stamps for stamps.
So, theoretically, someone who bought a postal reply coupon in Spain could redeem it in the United States for about a 10% profit. Purchasing coupons in countries with weaker economies could increase that margin substantially.
Okay.
So then he comes up with the idea, if he can just buy a whole bunch in these poor nations, get them back here to the States, transfer them into money, boom.
So let's say I spend $300 in dollars to buy these poor people stamps, mm-hmm. send them back to me, cash them in for $500.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like a weird international currency scheme.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Now, we can get more into... the logistical problems
you
of
don't
doing
have
that.
To. No. That's all right.
Pass.
But the biggest logistical problem is you can't exchange it for straight cash.
Sure.
You exchange it for stamps.
You're like, cool. I'm hood rich in stamps.
So now you have to find someone awesome. Who wants to buy $5,000.
Hey, you want to buy $2,000 worth of stamps?
You got any money? No, but I got stamps.
Would you take a stamp for this?
Yeah, what's the trade-in value for stamps?
I don't know why.
They're worth their weight in rupees.
You saying hood rich in stamps.
Hood rich in stamps, my album title.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's another t-shirt right there.
So anyway, this becomes the cornerstone to his newest money-making scheme. And to use my previous catchphrase from my previous episode, bazinga baby girl. So Ponzi starts selling this idea to people all around him, and he talks it up all around town. He wants to start this legitimately, and he goes to a local bank, specifically the Hanover Trust Company, and attempts to get a loan to pull this whole scheme off. Them quickly seeing how stupid this is... to go across the globe, buy a fuck ton of coupons, travel back via, because at the time, the quickest way to send anything would be via boat. Come back, sell them back to the postal system in the United States, and then try to figure out how to turn that into cash.
And see if you can return them.
Oh, I love it. He goes to a bank. It's like, all right, I need a loan. Okay, what's your idea? I'm going to get on a boat. I'm going to spend all your money on stamps. Coupons, though, and then I'm gonna get back on that boat.
Do another line.
Turn that into stamps.
He's like, it's a great idea.
I can also see him explaining this to the bank, like loan person, and like as he's saying it, being like, "No, I hear it now. I had to say it out loud. I hear it. This is. I'll leave.
Yeah.
Thanks for the coffee. Like
of that Always Sunny episode where they go to the bank and they're trying to be like, "We're gonna buy a bunch of fuel now with the money, and then fuel prices will go up in a month,
and then
we're gonna
sell that fuel."
It's the same kind of thing. Yeah.
No.
So, like I said, the bank quickly just says, no, please leave. So, he holds a grudge. It'll come back later, but...
You son of a bitch.
They don't see my genius.
Pretty much, yeah. They don't see his genius. So, he decides to do this on his own in a grassroots campaign.
Is this guy you?
He started GoFundMe.
They don't see my genius.
It's like Jamie's distant descendant. Sorry, ancestor.
I'm being roasted on my episode. Do I do that?
Genius.
Yes. My genius.
Yes.
No, you specifically put your thumb and your fingers and like a up to your forehead. Yeah.
So he starts his grassroots campaign. He's talking this up all over town, going bar to bar, business meetings to business meetings, basically just connecting with whomever, and then making this insane pitch. He starts telling people, if you invest in my company, I will give you a 50% return on your money in 30 days.
A hell of a guarantee.
Or I will double your money in 3 months.
Can't afford not to invest.
That's what he apparently, that was his whole angle. Like, big numbers, these people won't turn me down. They can't turn me down.
He must have been very charming.
He was apparently very charming, but apparently, like, when he got caught in a lie, like...
He just folded?
Yeah, he just folded.
Shit!
Was he hot?
Yeah,
no,
was
he had a bunch of skin missing.
I don't want to say
he was marred.
I don't want to say he was ugly. He was,
yeah, let me see. Let me see.
But I want to say he was like 5'2". So
I'm out.
That was tall in the 1800s.
For an Italian, absolutely.
Right. Everyone was malnourished as shit. Yeah. There.
What was the guy's first name again?
Charles Ponzi.
Charles.
Charles Ponzi nudes.
Not an ugly guy.
Do not look at my Google history.
Not really. I don't hate it.
Jesus Christ. Him with
he's
the mustache.
He's got a good stash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's handsome.
Yeah. He's handsome.
Is he?
I wouldn't throw my cat at him, but.
Yeah, he's like handsome for a bank teller.
I mean, it's okay. It's the hat that does it for me.
He's a sharp dresser.
Yeah, he's fine for the era. I'd say.
Yeah,
like most Italians are sharp dressed.
Yeah.
So in between, like, you would kick him out of beds for eating crackers.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't throw your cat at him.
Right.
Right. Right. Right.
Correct.
Somewhere between that.
That's most. No, I'm just kidding.
I would like to see the person that you would throw your own cat at.
Hate him.
She just hates the cat. Hate which she also yeah.
So apparently people around town started asking him, how could he afford these insane margins? He doubles down and says that he could easily afford these margins because with his scheme, he was promised a 400% rate of returns.
400%.
But that doesn't really like support that. And he's like, no. I can justify this. I was promised 400%. And everyone's like, yeah. Okay, that checks out. Yeah, like, yeah. What? No. Just being like, yeah, no.
So he starts selling these, like whatever, like, you know, you hand him $30, he would hand you 30 Ponzi notes.
This man created his own currency.
He created his own little like currency.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This is It's Always Sunny. Right.
Love it. Can I be the wild card?
So
I owe you. That's a weird way to spell Ponzi.
He starts his own company, and this is awesome. He calls it the Securities Exchange Company, which to any of our financial bros who have any finance history knowledge offhand, this predates SEC. The SEC, the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which is basically the police of doing this kind of shit.
So the United States copied Ponzi, scammed the scammer.
Actually, kind of, yeah.
A little bit.
Like,
I mean, since we left the gold standard, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all a scam.
It literally is too big to fail, as they think.
Yeah. They think that.
I know. It's gonna fall.
I hate it here.
The economy's fake. I don't know if people know that. Like,
people want a dog on us on astrology, but like, what is credit? Okay.
Yes, dude, thank you. Yeah, like, you want to shit Mark. On me because I'm a fucking Virgo, but like, it's also like, hey, your numbers in space are just that.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't mean anything beyond what you think it means. Look at Dogecoin and NFTs. As soon as people realized rightfully that was fucking stupid. is all the money fell out.
I mean,
of
look
it.
At GameStop stock.
Yeah, you can artificially manipulate whatever you want, yeah. Which they do.
I know.
Anyway,
I love it.
Well, they do, and then the government figures out that you can't do that, fucking government.
And then the government's like, "Well, hey, we were manipulating it for us."
1,000%.
I killed Jamie's vape. Oh, nice.
I don't think I've hit it once while we've done this episode either.
You're a professional.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I have Joseph's.
Well, don't kill mine, though.
Well, I have all these chargers. If
I love that laugh after you said, don't kill mine, though.
Because yeah, I need it. Because I'll freak out.
I'm really pretty strong, so, yeah.
So anyway, God, you're killing me.
Oh, it's fine. I'll move on. What's happening?
Oh. What are you doing?
In the first month of starting his company, he is able to get $1,800 worth of money. With inflation accounted for this, that would be about $28,000 now.
Okay, that's good.
That's a solid month.
That is a solid month.
Now, to make this even better, Ponzi did a couple things. When doing the company registration, he did a couple things to cover his ass. He made his wife's uncle, John Durero, as the company's president, who also invested, awesome. Who also invested in the company without even knowing that he did.
What? Wait, but how did he do that?
So he stole John's money.
He stole his money and then put the money, like his name on the money, and then also made him president of the company.
Foolproof.
The second person to sign off as a co-signer was his old Italian landlord, Guglielmo Bertoli, who was dead at the time and was listed as a co-signer and second in command. And then third and finally was Charles Ponzi. And by that, he also labeled himself as an employee and purely as the company manager.
Smart.
Okay. Smart. All right. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Covering his tracks a little bit.
So word spreads fast. People are thinking that this is crazy, but the Italian community eats this up. A lot of them start investing money by the hundreds and then eventually into the thousands. He would, in fact, even pay people a percentage if they got others to invest. So a little bit of
There's a pyramid scheme here,
yeah. But mm-hmm. Ponzi scheme is the name of the game.
It's all coming together.
The numbers vary wildly all over the place, and it took auditors years to look over the books and see how much he took. But it seems as though he was averaging somewhere between, in some accounts say $30,000 a week, some say $30,000 a month.
Jeez. Either way, especially back then.
Oh, logistically speaking, even
that's a lot for now.
$30,000 a week is wild, and $30,000 a month is probably closer to where it was
you
at.
You could have bought your own country with those kinds of numbers.
But seriously. $30,000 a month is still $500,000 a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what would transfer to
right.
now?
Right. Yeah, I could live off that.
Yeah. I could live off that.
That's fine.
No, I'm only making $500,000 a month.
So this is...
I'll just live within my means.
Right. 4 or 5 months in.
Not buying new.
A used yacht. Okay?
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Look, it's new to me. All right.
By the fourth or fifth month, this is now May of 1920, he had accumulated about $420,000 in investments, which is now $6.7 million. Now, things are coming up Milhouse for old Ponzi. He's really turning his life around, and where could it go wrong?
Dot, dot, dot.
Where? Well, first off, so Ponzi didn't really invest much money in other smart investments like he should have, or as other people told him to.
What?
But in fact, invested most of his money to control the other banks or get in control of other banks. Remember when I said that he had a little bit of grudge for being denied from the Hanover company?
He's still on it.
Did he buy the company and gut it? Yeah. Did he really?
Yeah.
Chess, so not checkers, baby.
He put $420,000 of that money, like the bulk of his investment. So he has money kind of everywhere. But they say on the books, $420,000 for sure. He has it in the Hanover company. Now, the Hanover company, apparently, like the owner, they were like trying to do some deal. And he comes in and talks to the owner and basically says, like, hey, who's the largest depositor of the entire bank? And they run the numbers and they see that it's him. And he's like, what would happen if I pull all of my money at one time?
That's like a threat.
So, yeah, he threatened him.
Hypothetically, what if?
So he threatens him to say that, like, I could pull all of my money out of your bank, which would make the bank collapse. And so they make an agreement that for a $200,000 stake in the bank, he becomes the owner of a $5 million bank.
Wow.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah. Balls.
Balls. I couldn't find anywhere to prove it, but someone said that, like, he apparently fired the loan officer that denied him the initial one.
I love that.
I don't necessarily need evidence to believe that.
Yeah, right?
I'm sure, like, he did.
I probably felt real good.
Same. Yeah. Yeah. Petty. We love a petty bitch.
Do you remember me?
Now,
it is like the genius.
The walking, talking mustache? Yes, I remember you.
That also applies to Austin.
That's so me. That's so me. My mustache is better, though.
So a couple great things happened now.
It's a good one.
Apparently, somebody else got wise to his scheme, and to a T, replicated his hustle. They called themselves the Old Company Foreign Exchange Company and opened up right next door. Their game plan was legitimately just to steal the people, because apparently going into his office, the lines are huge.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people every day were lining up to just give him money. And their idea was, well, we'll just open that next door, and anyone who gets too lazy, too tired, we'll just take their money.
That's good.
So funny enough, Ponzi wanted to shut them down, of course. But he was unable to call the authorities on the scammers for running his same scam.
Mm.
Right? Genius.
They're doing what I'm doing. Oh, wait.
I think it's fucking awesome.
Was it ran by the guy that he fired that didn't give him the loan in the first place?
Awesome. Was it, though? Yeah, that'd be great.
You son of a bitch.
Apparently, they were never stopped by him. They just stopped earlier before him. Mm. Before everything went belly up, they just were like, okay, that was good. Yeah. Yeah, they cashed out and just bounced out of town.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. Get out while you're ahead.
Yeah. So,
I mean, yeah.
Every time.
So Ponzi apparently he can't do anything, so he just keeps on moving with the rest of his life. And is still, like I said, making stupid money. And to make everything look more legitimate, he hired managers, secretaries, security detail, and even a publicity agent, William McMasters.
That's a made-up name.
It's a real name. And he's going to come back later in the story, which is fucking awesome. But after that, he decides to pay off his debt that he owed to the secondhand furniture store. The owner...
After making $30,000 a week / month, he's like, maybe I'll pay off that furniture now.
So Joseph Daniels, the secondhand furniture store owner who hooked up, but in reality was hustled by Ponzi, because if Ponzi wouldn't have made this money, Ponzi was not planning to pay him back.
Sure.
So he goes to Ponzi and he says, because he gave him such a good deal and because he had so little money, he should be considered as an investor of the company and should be entitled to 50% of it.
The balls.
Bold move, Cotton.
Let's see if it pays off.
As you can imagine, Ponzi kicked him to the curb and basically told him to fuck off.
Eat dicks.
Daniels comes back and files a $1 million lawsuit against Ponzi and is able to freeze over $700,000 in assets from five different accounts.
Damn.
This is posted all over the newspapers, all over media, and is painting Ponzi in a terrible light, which he does not like and he's trying to avoid at all costs.
It's bringing heat, too.
Yeah. So he's trying to get this nipped in the bud as soon as possible.
He's never going to shake this.
He actually does. He immediately settles the lawsuit for $50,000 and calls it even.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah.
The guy froze $700,000 of assets and only gets 50.
I mean, he only was owed, what, $350?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're walking with $50,000, I'd call that a W.
Yeah. No, you're good. Yeah.
And you're just a secondhand furniture store owner?
Yeah. You got it on a lark,
started
basically.
From the bottom. Sorry, okay.
That last sip of beer has got me not thinking clearly. No, that's a great deal.
In fact, I added this. I said, let the record show that Daniels is one of the few people that steps foot in Ponzi's life and is able to walk away better from it. Admittedly, he sued him, but let this be a lesson to all the listeners. If you see someone pulling off a terrible scam, sue them. That might be your best and quickest buck ever.
That's the ultimate scam.
Shout out to Strategic Hospitality.
Nice. Anyways, apparently Ponzi notes become so widespread and popular that it got to the point that non-believers put in some leftover money, treating it like a lottery ticket. Some people put in some of their savings, and some people put in their life savings, and some people even went so far as to borrow money from banks with high interest rates to invest the money.
What? Get in a loan to buy fake currency. It's Dogecoin all over again.
So
the original Dogecoin. Yeah. God.
So some people apparently did not get worried that this scam was too good. So early investors.
I'm sorry. Can you imagine like Ponzi in whatever realm he is, like looking at NFTs, like, God, come on!
I did this.
I had Ponzi note.
So early investors capitalized on 50% returns because, as you can imagine, people were scared that they weren't going to get the actual money. But because Ponzi had so much more money coming in, he was easily able to pay out all of his initial investors. Again, going back to the whole robbing Peter to pay Paulie. While some were satisfied with the returns and walk away, as you can imagine, their newfound confidence persuaded them to apparently turn the money right back in and only fueling the people to invest more.
Yep.
Another scheme that Ponzi used to add reputability was that he would get his secretaries to send postcards to investors a few days before their date to collect their profits was coming up. So people tended to trust him even more as it sounded like he wanted them to actually get their money. But again, most people would just, I'll just reinvest it and take the money and over and over and over again.
We love a personal touch.
So he's rolling in the dough. And the first thing he does apparently is, and it's super long-winded, but apparently he buys like a first-class ticket out of Dodge, right?
Yeah.
But everyone's watching his every move because they're like, if he leaves, we're going to pull all the money. So he can't just leave. So he uses the ticket to buy a first class ticket for his mother to move from Italy to Boston to come live with him.
Oh, mama's boy.
Yeah.
Kind of sweet.
It is kind of sweet.
Very Italian.
And apparently he wanted to buy a big lavish mansion, but Rose hated the idea of living in a gaudy, oversized mansion.
That's not very Italian of her. Come on, Rose.
It's too much gold.
Enough crown molding.
And so they opted for a luxurious home right outside of Boston, specifically in Lexington, Massachusetts.
Oh, Lexington. Okay. Mm-hmm. Ritzy.
Now, remember, this is
Massachusetts, not Kentucky.
Remember, this is 1920. Air conditioning is still new, highly inefficient, and comically enough, it was still commonplace for toxic coolants to be used. But nonetheless, Ponzi had his new home fitted with heating, air conditioning, and even a heated pool.
Nice.
Damn.
Nice, right? Now, I don't want any of the listeners to think that Ponzi is a madman, genius, snake salesman. And of course,
snake salesman.
I mean, snake oil salesman.
I bought this Rattler from you last week and it already died.
No, it's not. It's just sleeping.
Snakes sleep a lot.
So everyone starts to suspect that he's supposed to skip town. Like, of course, this scam is going to fold. He's going to leave. The people that believe this the most is the United States government.
Idiots. Oh, they're watching this.
Now the attorney general steps in. By this time, the attorney general starts suspecting that this was an entire scam, namely because they start running the numbers on his whole postal reply coupon investment, and none of it is making sense. They start thinking of other ways he could actually sustainably offer such high interest rates to his investors, and none of it is adding up. Even the local newspaper, the Boston Post, would mock Ponzi, most notably with cartoon strips showing the growing bubble of the Ponzi scheme ready to burst. At this time, the Attorney General is also tapping his phones and looking through all his mail, trying to find something.
The man is always watching.
What happened? Did he scam some money from the government or something?
they weren't sure. So they were doing their damnedest to try to find something. They found nothing.
I like that they were shading him through comic strips.
It's very 20s.
But my favorite part is, like, you know, like I said, they're tapping his phones, they're going through all of his mail, they're going through his garbage, yada, yada, yada. And they're hoping that they can find, like, he's running some, like, mob business of some sort on the side, that he's planning to leave to go to Mexico. They don't find anything, and they're even more confused, because they're like, surely we're dealing with a madman genius.
Right, they're just looking in the wrong place, because it's basically the first time somebody's done something to this scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're thinking, surely, if someone is doing something of this scale, they have a huge trick up their sleeve.
Right.
And like,
but it's just a new trick.
Like, you're watching the trick happen. They're like, no, there's got to be a red herring. So there's got to be
in plain sight.
Yeah.
So everyone is super confused, especially his biggest spectators. And even though he says to reporters that he doesn't want to divulge his secret investments and consistently high impossible returns, which I absolutely love. He's like, I don't have to tell anybody shit. As long as the money's there, you can shut the hell up. So Ponzi's wealth, just as his debt, even in its infantile state, grows and grows. And still not even a year in everyone, or... And still not even a year in. So we're not, by the time this all blows up, it's 9 months in.
Damn.
Yeah.
What a quick run.
Seriously.
So by the 8 month marker, everyone is absolutely flabbergasted by his growth and could see no real end in sight. Again, no one really knows how to stop him because they can't find that he's doing anything necessarily illegal. That is until Monday 2nd, 1920. Shit hits the fan.
Monday 2nd.
Monday, August 2nd?
What is it? You said Monday 2nd.
Sorry. Monday, August 2nd, 1920. Monday shit 2nd. Hits the fan.
The second Monday, 1920.
Monday.
Ponzi's former publicity agent, William McMasters, writes an editorial piece that gets plastered on the front page of the Boston Post titled, Ponzi, Hopelessly Insolvent. And would go on about how Ponzi is drowning in debt and that if you ever want to see your money, then you have to get it now while he still has some of it.
Oh, shit.
Damn.
There's the other shoe.
There's the other shoe right there.
Mm-hmm.
It never seems to be mentioned exactly what happened to make McMasters, Ponzi's former public agent, but it sounds like he found out the truth about Ponzi, wanted a bigger cut to keep his mouth shut, and was not given the raise he wanted. But, and this is my favorite, when asked why McMasters would say all of this as Ponzi's publicity agent, he said, and I quote, "A public relations man's first duty is to the public he serves."
Cool.
So like Ponzi, a true politician.
Yeah. Ponzi pissed him off and he was like, fuck this guy.
Yeah, fuck this guy. Like, you don't want to give me a bigger cut? I know how much money you're making. And then he was like, you know what? Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what? Fuck.
So by August 10th, 1920, U.S. federal agents come and impound everything in all their offices. On August 12th, he meets with investigators and auditors. He apparently asks if he is truly insolvent. And again, by his own words, he says he is truly insolvent and apparently put up no fight in shutting down his business and raises his hands to be cuffed.
Okay.
From there, he is indicted.
Been there.
From there, he is indicted with 86 counts of fraud and shut down. 86. They shut down his bank, the Hanover Trust Bank, the same bank he worked so hard to procure.
Fuck. So he had 9 months of all of his bullshit schemes actually working.
Yeah.
And then they just drop the hammer.
Yeah. And they're like, no. Again, it goes back to there's several different accounts of how things kind of worked out. There's another account in which he was actually arrested at the Hanover Bank And apparently he was surrounded by like a lot of Italians and a lot of his biggest fans. And the police there apparently were attacked by the mob trying to protect him because they so fervently believed that he was there to save them and help them get rich.
Wielding salamis, I got you.
You could make this same comparison to a lot of politicians now where they are plastered as saviors, but then when they are doing something illegal, they can say fake news and yeah. say that...
Wait, that a con artist in politics.
Yeah. That reminds me of something.
Or what? They could be doing illegal stuff and be like,
hey, I don't know what you're talking about.
You have to vote for me or you get the previous guy. I'm just going to keep doing the same shit, but do you want me to do it or do you want Donald Trump
to
do it?
Giant it's douche or worse. Turd sandwich.
Slightly worse. Wait, slightly less worse. Yeah, you know
While going through all his books, auditing every dollar, following all the indictments and all, they found out that Ponzi, and this is awesome, Ponzi never even bought a single postal reply coupon.
Not a one.
Not even one to put, like, frame it and put it on the wall.
Not a single one was ever bought. He just started the idea, sold the idea, took in all the money. I was like,
he's like, yes. I'm an idea man. Okay.
Oh my God.
I mean, even Bernie Madoff, like almost like he started kind of in the realm of which he was supposed to be operating in.
Who is that? Should I know?
Yeah.
Enron, right?
About 100 years later, a guy named Bernie Madoff ran the most successful Ponzi scheme of all time. Destroyed so many people's lives. There's a really cool documentary on it.
We should do a follow-up on that one. Yeah. That would be fun.
Wasn't it like one of the catalysts that started like the 2008 recession?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, impressive.
Yeah.
He really fucked a lot of people
fucked
over.
A lot. Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah.
Did he get killed?
Just put in jail
for a long time.
I think he died in jail, but of natural causes, I think.
I think so.
I don't think anybody killed him, even though they should have, honestly.
Taylor, can you do the whole I'm an ideas man thing again? Because I really enjoyed that.
I'm an ideas man.
Now, like I said, numbers did vary. But it seems as though the final number that the government reported said that about $10 million was invested into Ponzi's scheme within the eight-month run he had.
While
accounting for inflation... That is nearly $152 million.
God damn.
You honestly have to be impressed with the guy. Like, it'd be cool if he turned that money into something legitimate and then actually tried to pay people back appropriately.
That would be cool.
That would be cool, but...
He didn't.
Be a lot cooler if he did.
I've never done anything that
successful. But apparently he owed...
Even if it's built on a house of cards.
He apparently owed about $15 million, which in today's money would be $228 million.
Sheesh.
Mm. You got to spend money to make money.
I mean, that's what they say.
So the Boston Post even posted a list of people that had invested and lost most, if not all, their money and listing their sob stories, which is kind of messed up, but it was kind of funny.
Sales papers.
Here's a couple of them. One was a World War I vet who was suffering from tuberculosis and invested his life savings, hoping to take the money to retire in Arizona.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, where the clean air is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One woman...
They said that shit, by the way.
They did say that, not my words.
One woman invested... This is like comically messed up to me. One woman invested the $1,000 her husband received for losing his leg in an industrial accident.
Only $1,000? I mean, I know back then, but that's your leg.
For a leg?
For a whole leg.
For a whole limb.
Damn.
I like both my legs.
I don't play favorites.
And then one couple invested their $4,600 life savings that they were going to use to buy their first home.
Mm.
Anyway,
I feel at least bad for them.
Ponzi was quickly put to federal trial and was swiftly sentenced to 5 years for fraud.
Just five?
5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, for 9 months.
You know what that is? Return on investment. I'll show you how to take 9 months and turn it into 5 years.
He, of course, went to prison for the third time. And all things considered, I don't think he was that shaken by it. Like, if you had spent several years in prison across several different nations, like...
And then lived incredibly luxurious your time
for
outside
like 9 months?
Yeah.
Easy come, easy go.
Yeah,
you know?
Come down the wash.
I'll just make a few tweaks.
But while he was in prison, he wrote to many of his investors... Oh, this is awesome. Oh, he wrote, I quote, to many of them... he hoped the recent miscarriage of your investments wouldn't mar the spirit of the Christmas season.
God, I hate
Fuck
him.
Fuck you.
What, he sent a Christmas card?
He sent the Christmas
card. We love
cards.
A personal touch.
Whoa. I'm sorry, but as soon as you're like locked up, shut up. Shut up.
I thought you were about to say he was like, I'll be back out. Don't worry, I'll get you your money. No, he sent him Christmas cards.
He sent people going,
sorry, like, I hope this didn't ruin your holiday.
So I got this new job at the prison. But I'll be back to managing your financials very soon.
I just love the recent...
He didn't say that.
It was the recent like, miscarriage
about
of
losing
your investments.
All your money.
No, miscarriage of investments. Ugh. That's so...
Yeah, because then it's like,
so
it's not
speak.
My fault. You know, it just happened, yeah. You know?
Well... So
this
good.
Bad thing happened to all of us. Merry Christmas.
And just like before.
Right, you think you got it bad.
I'm in prison, okay?
Could be worse, all right? Perspective.
And just like.
I'm the victim.
And just like before, there was a wide variety of responses and levels of belief and disbelief. Some, as you can imagine, insulted him and the very fiber what? Of his being for stealing all their money.
That's
sure.
What?
Some wished him well.
What?
And hoped he would land on his feet.
Who would?
I hope you come out on the other side, man.
This will be all right. Dude, it gets better.
You just keep doing it.
Some people even sent him money.
Yeah.
Oh, hoping God. He would invest it wisely as soon as he got out.
They're feeling the Christmas spirit. It's, you know, it makes sense.
Ponzi was released 3 and a half.
Go to hell.
His run isn't over.
Jesus. What?
How I'm down, but I'm not out.
Not exactly.
Are you
I'm
that?
Down, but I'm not out, babe. I'm still in this game.
We're at halftime right now.
I got that dog in me.
I got that dog in me.
Ponzi was released 3.5 years later, presumably for good behavior.
Watch this.
In 1924, and was promptly placed in Massachusetts state trial. So the first one was federal. Okay. Now, Massachusetts state is going against him. And again, swiftly convicts him, sentence him, and gives him a harsher sentence with a 7 to 9 year term.
Okay.
He appealed their decision and was able to get enough money to get out on bail. Yes, hang on.
Hold my beer.
In this time, he ran off to the best place on earth, Florida.
In all seriousness, how much is left? This might be a two-parter.
No. We're rapping.
Okay.
We're rapping.
We rapping now, baby.
He's going to Florida.
He goes to Florida. He goes to the best place.
Where everyone goes to die.
Or commit That's, more crimes.
I just think of Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. Miami Beach!
He goes to Florida in hopes that he can make enough money for his legal costs. So
I'm selling gators.
He starts a company called the Charpon Land Syndicate Company. Charpon, Charles.
It sounds Ponzi, legit.
Charpon. He goes with a fancy name, so he just kind of...
Charpon.
Charpon. You get it. Now, what did this company do? They would acquire and sell land. He buys land cheap and sells land for hire.
It's genius.
Yeah, all this time.
Well, you know, land. They're not making any more of it.
The big problem... He starts buying up swamps and then sells it as straight up land.
Like, you can build a home here.
Would you like to buy my bog?
To be fair, he was like decades ahead of his time because that's basically what Disney did.
Yeah.
Shit.
You know? He just held on to it Could have made a good ass amount of money.
Keep the swamp puppies.
Real estate is the safest investment, right?
Right. Tell me I'm right.
I don't have any investments.
I need to know that I'm right.
Quickly, newspapers and investors caught on and found out he was Charles Ponzi from the Boston newspapers, and quickly charged him with fraud. He skips town.
Tale as old as time.
And starts his move to head to Texas. And he does so by ship, where he is promptly arrested and returned to Massachusetts for his next prison term.
Florida to Texas is predictable, you know?
That's a lateral move.
From Florida on a boat.
Sounds like it.
Well, you'll never catch me.
No, like he buys like, they're not cruise ships, but like a ship that goes from Florida to Texas, Texas to wherever.
Like through the Gulf, I guess.
Yeah.
A ferry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically.
So he hops over to Texas.
He could have gotten away if he would have just like gone by land.
Drove,
if it wasn't for those meddling kids.
If it wasn't for the meddling government. Yeah.
Charles Ponzi.
That's the thing. This guy's been running scams for years. And no one's Charpon. Like, maybe I shouldn't get into bed with this guy. Like, although, look at our ex-president. Nobody takes that to heart.
Nope.
By this time, auditors had liquidated all his frozen assets, crunched all the numbers, and again, they had spent months and years trying to go through all of his paperwork and still said that millions were unaccounted for. Nonetheless, in 1931, after everything was said and done, courts stated that Ponzi still owed $2 million more dollars. But with what they had from his liquidated assets, they gave out matching percentages to his owed investors. They were all given what was the SEC notes that were worth pennies to the dollars they had been given.
Woof.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're now in the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Rough.
The year 1934.
Ugh.
Ponzi gets out of prison again. Ponzi is met with a pissed off mob of victims and all their families.
And a pissed off mom.
There was definitely a pissed
Maybe
off mom.
Maybe a couple.
Apparently, they said a lot of children and grandchildren were there because a lot of parents had given up like their life savings.
Yeah, right? They're like, you ruined my inheritance, you fuck.
You ruined my entire life. So they're yelling and throwing things at him. And reporters were there, and apparently they wanted to interview him as he was trying to leave. And he said, quote, I went looking for trouble, and I found it.
Same.
Shortly after his release,
Ponzi... Was he getting these off a cereal box?
It's reductive, but all right.
Shortly after his release, Ponzi was cited for deportation proceedings. And
this ship him back.
Dude, this is fucking awesome.
Go back to your own country.
To Canada, Mexico, to Italy. Where? I mean, come on.
You gotta love this. So he apparently reached out to the Massachusetts governor, Joseph B. Eli, and asked for a full pardon so he didn't have to be deported.
Wow.
Again, you gotta love the balls.
Guy. You gotta love a guy.
Did
that's
he go up there
write.
And just be like, please?
I honestly never would have thought that. I never would have thought of like, well, I guess I'll just write the governor of Massachusetts.
I think everyone hates me.
Yeah, and hope he's in a good mood when he gets my letter.
Maybe he just forgot I'm Charles Ponzi. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, oh, sure, whatever. Wait, who? Fuck, I already signed it. She's fine.
This reminds me of Cartman going up to his mom.
Mr. Governor, could I have a pardon? Oh, stealing people's money is very bad, and you shouldn't do that.
Write it 100 times.
Now, of course, he is denied, and by July 13th, he turns his appeal down. On October 7th, Ponzi was officially deported. Ponzi puts it as he was forced to leave his wife, Rose.
Forced.
Rose was like, bye.
But again, this was 14 years after the initial incident where he is charged and goes to prison.
And then he runs away and goes to prison again. He hasn't seen her in like 14 years.
She's like, is this enough for an annuity? An annulment? An annuity? An annulment?
It's hard to find anything that she actually says, but it, you know, as you can imagine, this wasn't the time where they were interviewing women.
Yeah, who cares? Yeah.
But
you can talk.
<she's>, you thought
she stayed in the United States.
She was like, yeah, but then ah, bah, 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 bah,
bah. Get back in the kitchen.
She apparently stayed in Boston after reporting that he was in no position to support her in any event. And
you don't say.
Divorced him in 1937.
Took her that long?
Yeah.
Stand by your man, you know?
I mean, within reason.
I mean, she was there for that long.
I'm fucking kidding, Joe. No way.
I know you're kidding.
Hey, I paid a lot of men's bills. I can't really say anything.
Shit. Ain't that the damn truth?
Go off, queen. Pay them men's bills, yeah.
Independence. Yeah. Kind of, not really.
Thanks, feminism.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's bring down the patriarchy and make women pay bills. Yeah. I like this. I know, yeah.
So you're saying I get to stay home and make sandwiches all day?
So, shut up, sweetheart.
Yes, honey.
Apparently he's in Italy and starts doing the same shit.
Back up to his old ways.
Back in the game, baby. He starts writing an autobiography and tries to get 1,000. His game plan is to get 1,000 investors to invest at least $25 each so that he could pay off his debts and start over.
I'll just take their money and pay my shit.
Just
off.
A small investment. Yeah. $25,000.
I'm once again asking you to pay my debts.
Well, it didn't work.
No.
And what? No one believed him.
What?
Credibility?
So what does he do? He doubles down and befriends people that are somehow worse than he is.
Birds of a feather.
He gets in good with Mussolini's government.
Oh, my.
Hell yeah. Back to the mob, baby.
Not the turn I was expecting.
And you said this is not a two-parter?
And for those of you that are not familiar with Mussolini, he was Italy's dictator and essentially founded fascism.
Italian daddy.
Which later will play a bigger role in World War II, which you know.
You may have heard of.
But you may have heard of it, but we're going to be rather reductive about it, kind of what we did with the Gulf War, and basically say it was not good.
It was bad.
A lot of bad things happened. And Italy did a lot of the bad things.
Yeah, very few people enjoyed it.
Yeah, and then some bad things allegedly happened.
The craziest thing is that Italy did a lot of bad things,
sorry.
And then somehow just kind of got away with it. Like, nobody's mad at Italy for World War II.
It's they're like, it's the food. You know?
It's the food. Japan got bombed pretty good.
Twice.
Germany's a national shame lives on.
Yeah.
Italy, they're like, oh, but it's so beautiful. It tastes so good.
It was the man with the mustache. Got me into it.
I had a fish named Mussolini once.
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck?
He's a guppy. It was supposed to be like...
Ironic. It was supposed to be cute. Ironic.
It was supposed to be cute.
Grace on board.
He died.
I had a fish named Hitler. That's so funny. Yeah.
Was it a guppy with like a little military uniform on? He would like march across the bowl.
Yeah, he killed all the other fish.
Yeah, he killed all the other fish. Then they hung him, but it was weird because he was in the water, and so he couldn't really like...
Still living. Just let him hang.
He's just tied.
Anyway, he works his way up in the Mussolini camps.
Jesus.
And is awarded a pretty sweet gig. He is awarded the job of being an agent in the Italian state airline Alla Littoria, specifically the state airline agent in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. So he's flown out to Brazil and lives a lavish lifestyle with servants, limousines, security detail, and all.
What in the actual fuck? This is insane.
What?
This man's luck is insane.
Seriously. Tell me that Ponzi, like, he's like, hey, I did it.
He spent his golden years in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fantastic
big booty
place.
Bitches.
Yeah, man, like, come on.
Big booty mama seat is
as far as the eye can see. Oh my God. Can we play? There's a really great Italian song called Shut Up Your Face. If we could play that at the end of this episode.
Is there really?
Yeah. It goes, oh, what's the matter to you? Why you look so sad? What do you think you do? You got the no respect. It's a not so bad. It's a nicer place. A shut up in your face.
Dean Martin, huh? No.
Close.
Pavarotti.
So shit is going great for Ponzi. He is living the high life. He is technically not doing anything wrong or illegal or hustling anybody. And he's got a generally great life.
You don't say.
This is going great until
oh,
Mussolini starts gearing up for World War II.
No. Here it goes.
And then they start sending back jewels and different assets from Italy back or from Brazil back to Italy specifically for World War II funding.
Sure. Mm. Got to pay for all those jackboots and uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, the British intelligence gets wind of this and Brazil at the time now sides with the Allies. So British intelligence shuts the shit down super fast and forces the Brazilian government to cut off all the gas supplies to the Italian state airlines.
Mm,
nice. So Ponzi is out of a job.
Oh.
Now, it's never said if they fire him or if he's kind of offered a different job, but he doesn't go back.
Why would you?
Yeah.
You're in Brazil.
I'm in Brazil.
He's in Brazil.
Right. Living large.
Nobody knows who you are.
Yeah. Or you can go back to Italy and face World War II.
Yeah.
Pass. No,
so,
thanks.
So he stays in Brazil to teach and be an interpreter.
How much Shakira's grandma? No.
To be an interpreter of French and English. But he, again, has no real job and makes now pennies to the dollar.
He didn't save anything.
No, of course not.
He doesn't seem like a saving type.
No. Not really a saver.
Now, remember that autobiography scheme that we brought up earlier?
Yep.
He never wrote the autobiography.
Isn't that
the auto part?
It's the auto part of the biography.
So now that he's got all the time in the world and no money, he actually starts to write his own biography.
Oh God, but, so he finally buys a stamp. I'm impressed.
He buys a stamp, writes his own story. He's turning it around.
That's the end of the story. And not to this day have I bought a stamp. The end.
But he kind of really just starts writing it because his health starts deteriorating so fast. By 1941, he has a heart attack that leaves him considerably weakened. His eyesight begins to fail, and by 1948, he was almost completely blind.
Oh, when all the schemes are gone, he just can't see the light anymore.
A brain hemorrhage apparently paralyzed his left leg and arm. Ponzi died in a charity hospital in Rio de Janeiro on January 18th, 1949. Ponzi, before he dies, grants one last interview to an American reporter, telling him, quote, "Even if they never got anything for it, it was cheap at that price. Without malice or forethought, I had given them the best show that was ever staged in their territory since the landing of the pilgrims. It was easily worth $15 million to watch me put the thing over."
This self-indulgent fuck.
And at the end, and at the time of his death, he had an unpublished manuscript of his autobiography that was to be titled "The Rise and Fall of Mr. Ponzi." And his quote-unquote estate was valued at about $100. Just enough to pay for his funeral.
Fuck this guy.
Wow. Oh.
How old was he?
He was born in, 18?
82?
I think it was 82. Yeah, 1882. He died in 1940. 1949. So he was at least 49 years old.
Yeah. So 67. He was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the math.
He was at least 40. I'd put him like well over 16 years old.
I mean, 67 for back then. That's life.
That's a full life, and he did it mostly lavishly, it sounds like.
What a fuck.
The bulk of his life was not lavish. The bulk of his life
Was in not
but I mean, like,
it's not, it wasn't in prison, which it should have been.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. It's impressive.
I mean, well, to retire in Brazil, you know, and then like World War II starts and oops, I don't have a job anymore. Whoopsie. Mm-hmm. But I'm in Brazil. Fuck off.
He made out better than he should have.
That's more than he deserves.
That's exactly what I mean.
Considering how most people were fighting in a fucking war.
Yeah.
And he's just
there's
chilling.
Like an act of genocide. Yeah.
he stole these people's life savings, came out of prison during the Great Depression, one of the worst, most miserable times to like exist in the modern era. And then escaped World War II also in Brazil.
Didn't get drafted.
Yeah.
That's something else. I'm going to do a hard rap on this one because this is a long boy. If anybody has any final thoughts.
It was 15 million military deaths in World War II and 38 million civilian deaths.
And not a one Ponzi.
And one bullet couldn't find its way to this guy.
Yeah,
not
one.
Well, this is Joseph saying, I guess if you just scam a bunch of people and do a bunch of white collar crime, you might get to
be
die and live comfortably or be president.
Seriously.
So maybe don't.
Don't.
I think the takeaway is if you believe in yourself and really never take a L as a L and just...
Don't spin this.
Don't do that.
Yeah, this is Austin saying, never trust a Sicilian.
Whoa.
Well, I'm Grant, and that was a good one. I really liked
this.
Thank you. Yeah, that was fun.
I'm Taylor, and I guess I'm glad I was invited.
Shut up.
You love us.
I love you guys so much.
And I'm 1, 2, 3. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Like what you hear? Subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at trashville_USA. And if there's a true crime story you want the gang to cover, email us at don'temailtrashville@gmail.com. Murder Schmurder is produced by Jamie. Our tracking engineer is Grant. And our mix and mastering engineer is Julie. Incidental music and our theme song is provided by Jules. This has been another production of